Hey, everybody. I want to welcome you to the Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast. This is your host, Mance Rader. This is episode 135. It's going to be on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. It'll be on my website, freemanbeyondthewall.com. It'll also be on libertarianinstitute.org in the blog and the podcast section. I want to remind you that I wrote two books, Freedom Through Memedom and The Kids Are Not All Right. They are available on Amazon. They're also available on my website, freemanbeyondthewall.com/store, where you can only get them for cryptocurrency. Today, I invited Scott Horton to come on and talk about Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. I had a request from a listener to go over the history of what WikiLeaks is all about, what they've done, and specifically talk a little bit about Julian Assange. So Scott has studied up on this. Scott knows what were in all of the drops that they've done over the years, and he's basically going to talk about what they've done, if they're good or bad, and is Julian Assange a hero or is he a villain? So without any further delay, here's a recording of my interview with Scott Horton. All right, I'm here with the great Scott Horton. How are you doing, Scott?
I'm doing good, man. It's good to talk to you.
Cool, man. With all of this Julian Assange talk in the news, I wanted to get someone on to basically give some background to how he came to prominence and basically what's going on up to today. So I know that it was the Manning leak, the Bradley Manning, now Chelsea Manning leak, that really brought him to the headlines of MSM, the mainstream media. Tell us about that, and maybe if you know a little bit about what was going on with him before that.
Yeah. So WikiLeaks had been around for, I think, like about a year or two before the Manning leak. And they had published some stuff about the government in Somalia and some stuff about Russia and I'm not sure what all, but they had I'm trying to remember. I think there was some stuff about the U.S. government as well. And, you know, for people who are paying close attention to the national security beat and that kind of thing, this was a pretty huge invention that here was this this place that was encouraging leaks of original documents and simply wanted to post them online, unadulterated, and just, you know, let the journalists take it from there, or, you know, the writer, reporters, to take it from there. I don't mean to distinguish Assange and WikiLeaks from journalists, because they certainly are, and that's something we have to talk about, too, the distinctions there, such as they supposedly are. But this was a pretty exciting thing, the advent of WikiLeaks, and you know, Daniel Ellsberg, the great whistleblower from the Pentagon Papers, he had been saying, for one, on my show, but really to anyone who would listen for years, that, hey, if you're in the U.S. government and you know some things, it's time for you to man up and leak and tell the truth to the American people. We've got to stop these wars, and it's time for you to step up and live up to your responsibility. After all, we're asking these 19-year-old boys to go and kill innocent people and get their legs blown off or worse in these horrific wars. You over at the Department of Justice or inside the Department of Defense or inside the CIA, you have an obligation to them to tell the truth. And yet, even if it means life in prison, to tell the truth, to stop these wars, to let the American people know what the hell is going on. And, you know, it's funny because that should all just go without saying, right? But no, it takes a Daniel Ellsberg to say. And by the way, Ellsberg was facing life in prison. The only reason he didn't get life in prison, because he was guilty as hell. The only reason he didn't get life in prison is because Richard Nixon hired some Cubans to murder him. And then also tried to bribe his judge with a Supreme Court seat. And the judge just said, that's it. I'm just throwing this thing out with prejudice. Especially when it came to light that, that Nixon had hired assassins to murder Ellsberg. And so anyway, Ellsberg absolutely was risking life in prison and knew it when he did what he did. And so, you know, especially in the George Bush years, the sense of urgency maybe doesn't feel as bad now to some of us. But in those George Bush years at the height of Iraq War II and all that, the emergency was so great. And it still is, but I'm just talking about kind of the overall kind of feeling about it. And so then it was Manning that really – well, so before Manning. And so what Assange was doing was basically he set up this system where people could quite anonymously – and I guess you'd have to have a few levels of VPN and do what you can to protect yourself. But he had this secure drop system set up where people could upload original files and they would be published. And without fear or favor. I mean, his whole thing was whatever government or big business or whatever it is you're ratting on, if it's newsworthy, right? I don't want to see your, you know, ex-girlfriend's emails or whatever, but if it's newsworthy, then they'll post it. And in fact, I just read a piece the other day by this Italian journalist who talked about how they had some Trump documents that they were ready to publish in the summer 2016, where they're accused of doing so much to influence the election against Hillary. They were ready to leak some documents or to post some documents that had been leaked to them about Trump, but then it turned out that they'd already been published elsewhere. But anyway, so that was basically the setup of the deal. You upload the documents, we'll vet them, make sure they're correct, and then post them online. So then in 2010, a young Army, I believe, specialist at the time named Bradley Manning leaked, and, you know, this much, he's convicted of it. So, yeah, not that WikiLeaks ever confirmed it, but it's pretty clear that Manning leaked the Iraq logs, Iraq war logs, Afghan war logs, State Department cables, and Guantanamo files. And these were just absolutely huge. I mean, for those of you who don't remember, maybe you were too young or you weren't paying attention or you were a bad guy back then or whatever it is, this was the hugest thing. And to this day, if you search State Department cables reveal or State Department cables confirm or et cetera like that, you will find tens of thousands of results and at least thousands of original reports that, if they're not based entirely on those State Department cables, they have at least one aspect of the story says as a State Department cable released by WikiLeaks confirms, or as the WikiLeaks confirm, or whatever, WikiLeaks shorthand for State Department cables, sometimes. But there are thousands of extremely important news stories that came out of just the State Department cables, never even mind the Iraq and Afghan war logs, which showed all kinds of scandalous stories out of both of those wars, massacres and political intervention and continuing torture far after Abu Ghraib and all of that in Iraq War II. And then the Guantanamo files revealed the identities of everyone being held at Guantanamo when those identities were still being held as secret at the time. And so now the bad guys, the narrative at the time was blood on his hands, blood on his hands. And they were doing that. They were smearing Assange and Manning for this and saying, you know, anytime anyone leaks the truth about what the government is doing, that you're going to get CIA spies rolled up and murdered. You're going to get, you know, American soldiers killed. And yet that just wasn't true. And even Secretary of Defense Gates at the time, quite against interest, admitted that that just wasn't true. He said all that hype was significantly overwrought. And it was true that there were a few informants in Afghanistan whose names were published, but it was never shown that anyone got a revenge attack off against any of them for it or anything like that. But it was this great smear campaign, blood on his hands, blood on his hands. And of course, just like, oh, Russia did it, Russia did it. Nobody ever has to prove anything. They just say it over and over again until a bunch of minor birds repeat it. And then, you know, it begins to really take hold. But so that was, you know, where the big splash was made, from WikiLeaks. And then there's been a lot of great stuff that has come out in between that time and, the more recent attention, which is all centered around, WikiLeaks posting the leaked emails in the 2016 election.
Okay. What year were the Manning leaks?
The Manning leaks, they started being published at the end of 2010.
Now, how much of that covered, well, I mean, what was it? I guess at that point, the majority was covering what happened under George W. Bush, right?
Right. I think they were current up through 2009, something like that. So there was the first year of the Obama administration, but not much after that, I think.
So did I assume at that point, the right hated this. Mm-hmm. And the left loved it.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the deal. Of course, you know, the ridiculous partisanship. And, you know, we should mention here that the course of history was changed significantly by these leaks. For one thing, the Arab Spring broke out in Tunisia. Now, the American sock puppet dictator there, Ben Ali, was a notoriously corrupt thief of a kleptocratic dictator, and everybody already knew it. But when the WikiLeaks started coming out and the State Department cables had all these reports from, you know, the ambassadors and their staff back home detailing Ben Ali's corruption and detailing how his wife's family were just stealing all, just robbing the whole country blind and this and that. And then in, I believe it was in January of 2011, just 2-3 weeks later, after the State Department cable started being published and this scandal had been building in the Tunisian media, a guy, I'm sorry, I always forget his name, which is terrible because he really does deserve to be remembered. He was a local, I believe, doctorate student, or maybe he had recently graduated with his PhD, and he was reduced to selling fruit in a stand on the side of the road because of how horrible the economy was, partly because of how much the government had been stealing. And then the local cops came and destroyed, not just confiscated, but destroyed his fruit and vegetable stand because he didn't have the proper permit. And so he went down to the local city hall type office and he burned himself to death. Just as, you know, the Buddhist monks famously did in protest of the South Vietnamese government during the Vietnam War, just as a young Palestinian did in the Gaza Strip only a couple of months ago, burned himself to death in protest. In fact, a guy in New Hampshire did this on the steps of the CPS a few years back over them denying custody of his daughter for years and years and unreasonably. But anyway. So once this guy burned himself to death, riots broke out big time, and they're basically bread riots. You know, part of having the reserve currency of the world means that when Alan Greenspan and Ben Bernanke are increasing the money supply, the other countries in the world have to also increase their monetary inflation as well in order to try to match the American inflation rate so that the trade balances don't get too out of whack and that kind of thing. But then that means the price inflation, where it hits on the street and the poorest hit hardest first, that means that people who are living on a dollar a day, now that only buys 50 cents worth of nothing. And so this was a major part of what happened with that riot. But with the WikiLeaks in the background, this led to a revolution, frankly, and Ben Ali and his family and his wife's family having to flee the country in a plane full of gold bricks for exile in Saudi Arabia. And then quite famously, the entire population of Egypt said simultaneously in Arabic, "You can do that?" And they went outside and they overthrew the American sock puppet-backed dictator of Egypt, Hosni Mubarak, who America had been backing ever since the assassination of Sadat. So it had been 35 years, something like that. This was Hillary Clinton's, quote, family friend. And the Obama administration did everything they could to keep Mubarak in power. But the entire political spectrum in Egypt said that is enough. And they overthrew Mubarak. The junior officers were polled and informed the senior officers and the government that we'll kill you before we massacre the people in Tahrir Square. That's it. Game over. And only then did Mubarak leave power. And they held elections, Muslim Brotherhood won, and then, of course, an Israeli, Saudi, and American-backed coup a year and a half later canceled those free elections and installed Fatah al-Sisi in power, the current blood-soaked monster, Mubarak's replacement, who rules Egypt to this day. And then, of course, this led also to the uprisings in Libya and in Syria, both of which were hijacked by America and America's Saudi allies in favor of a bunch of Al-Qaeda veterans of Iraq War II, and the rest is history there. But anyway, so that was huge. And then another major thing that came out of the WikiLeaks was when Obama was trying to, renegotiate the Status of Forces Agreement to keep American troops in Iraq. And then the news hit, and I think it was not from one of the war logs. It was one of the State Department cables, I think, that confirmed this massacre, this brutal massacre where these American soldiers had murdered this family, including executing a baby at point-blank range, and then they called in an airstrike to try to cover it up. But the airstrike hit the wrong side of the house, and so all the bodies survived. And the local officials took them, and everybody knew what had happened. But the State Department, and of course they lied about it, but then the State Department cable came out and proved that what everybody already knew was in fact true. And then that was all the political cover that Nouri al-Maliki needed, which he didn't, you know, he didn't want to renegotiate the thing anyway. But that was all the political cover he needed to tell Obama, sorry, man, I just can't do it. There's nothing I can do to renegotiate this contract, not after this news. And that got the Americans kicked out of Iraq for a few years until the Obama-created ISIS crisis led to, you know, Iraq War III and renewed American intervention there.
Now, instead of jumping forward any further, I wanted to ask one question that I think a lot of people have heard and see if you can confirm it. I've heard that everything that WikiLeaks has ever dropped, they've never had to retract anything.
That's right. That's right.
That's friggin' amazing.
Yep.
All right. So let's jump forward from the Manning leak and between, well, let's give us something that is there anything in between 2016's drop and Manning that would piss off the left side of the aisle?
Well, I mean, I don't know what the hell their values are anymore, man, honestly, but there's all kinds of stuff in there. Obama intervening with the Spanish to not indict Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld for torture, even though under the theory of universal jurisdiction, if the American government will not pursue criminal charges against torturers, then any other state in the world has the right to pick those up. And the Spanish certainly did, just like they prosecuted Pinochet for his war crimes in Chile. And so they were moving forward and I think had even indicted Rumsfeld or were certainly had put him under criminal investigation. And the Obama administration went over there and turned the screws on the Spanish big time and said, you better not do this or else, et cetera. And also promised that don't worry, we have a legitimate investigation going, which was a reference to the completely bogus Durham investigation that had nothing to do with the principals and was only an investigation into whether a couple of CIA agents might be held criminally responsible for murder in the case of Gul Rahman, who was beaten and frozen to death in the salt pit torture dungeon outside of Kabul in Afghanistan, and Mahmoud al-Jamadi, who was tortured by the CIA to death in Abu Ghraib prison, the famous pictures of the pretty blonde girl with her thumbs up over the corpse there. And of course, Durham did his preliminary investigation and decided that, oh yeah, there's nothing to pursue here, even though you or I in front of a grand jury could have gotten an indictment and put these guys in prison in front of a petit jury, no problem. They were guilty of murder. But anyway, that was just a hoax, a put on. So that was one thing. We know from the Hillary Clinton era WikiLeaks, the few of them that were from her era of her State Department's confirmation, that the biggest state sponsor of terrorism in the world is not Iran. It's, other than the USA, our allies, the Saudis, the Qataris, and the United Arab Emirates. They're the ones who back bin Laden's factions and the different al-Qaeda-like groups around the world. And we also saw the cable from 2006 describing how they would like to foment sectarian division and revolution inside Syria. Let's see, the Honduras coup in 2009. More confirmation of what we already knew about how Hillary Clinton intervened. In fact, you know, over Obama's head. Obama said this was a coup and this was illegal and we don't like this and we want the Organization of American States to convene. And Hillary basically just said belay that order and shut him down and intervene with the Organization of American States to prevent them from condemning the coup and doing anything about it. And therefore legitimizing the coup. She bragged about that in her biography, by the way, in the hardback, and then excised that portion from the paperback when she realized that was no longer something to brag about, but something to be embarrassed by, something that could hurt her. She cut that out. There was the April Glaspie memo. Here's one for the Democrats. Bradley Manning, Chelsea Manning, finally leaked. You might even remember some of you oldsters. In 1992, Ross Perot said, oh yeah, well let's see the State Department cables then. Let's see James Baker's instructions to April Glaspie, the American ambassador to Iraq, where he told her to tell Saddam, go ahead and invade Kuwait. We don't care. Which was true. And George H.W. Bush said, oh, you're attacking the national honor. No, he's attacking you and Secretary of State James Baker III. And the anniversary was just the other day, July 25th, 1990. April Glaspie told Saddam Hussein, hey man, what's with the tank movements over there near the Kuwaiti border? And Saddam explained that, well, we borrowed all this money from Kuwait, Saudi, and UAE in order to wage the Iran-Iraq war, which we all know from Robert Perry's journalism that Jimmy Carter gave Saddam Hussein the green light to start that war in 1980 in the first place. And we know that Reagan continued that policy and backed Saddam Hussein. So did the French and the British, including selling him chemical weapons for use against the Iranians. Reagan gave him access to U.S. satellite intelligence to better target the Iranians with chemical weapons and so forth. And but when that war was over, Saddam said, now I'm bankrupt. The price of oil is down below like $10 a barrel at the time. And the Kuwaitis are demanding payment, and yet I can't pay them. And to add insult to injury, they're overproducing from shared oil wells on the border beyond the contract. And then when I ask them to negotiate, they keep making appointments to negotiate, and then they keep shining me on and not even showing up. And then I find out they're dancing at the clubs in Cairo while they're supposed to be hanging out, you know, negotiating with me. And April Glaspie told them, well, we're not interested in, and we don't take a position on Arab-Arab border disputes, which was at least a flashing yellow light, if not an outright green light. And in fact, she even said the United States is not interested in having a war in the Persian Gulf, which meant explicitly we won't do anything about it. Because, of course, you know, an Iraqi invasion of Kuwait was not a war. It couldn't possibly be a war. It was just a coup de main. It was a roll right in and seize the capital city, no problem. And Glaspie herself later told the New York Times, well, we didn't think he was going to take the whole country. Yeah, in other words, they gave him permission to occupy the northern half of Kuwait. That's how Desert Shield and then Desert Storm, Iraq War One, began. Iraq War One that still rages to this day, in fact. Because the Republicans told their pet, Saddam Hussein, go ahead, what the hell do we care? And then it was only after Margaret Thatcher said, don't you go wobbly on me, Bush, to Bush Sr., basically saying, you can't be less manly than me, I'm a woman. On TV. And so he went, oh, geez, yeah, I guess, you know, this will not stand. Come on, let's have a war. But he had originally agreed with James Baker. What the hell do we care about Kuwait? It wasn't one of America's interests at all. It was a British interest, maybe, but none of ours. So there's one for the Democrats. And of course, now this was, I think, really huge, too, was from Iraq War II. The collateral murder video. I hope people will look at this if they haven't seen it before. It's gunsight footage from an Apache helicopter massacring some Reuters reporters in East Baghdad in 2007. And we know that David Finkel, the Washington Post reporter and author of The Good Soldiers, had seen this video because he wrote about it, but he didn't tell all what was in it. And he refused to publish the video at the Washington Post. And this was something that had motivated Manning. Manning was turned in by a rat named Adrian Lamo, who he had been chatting with in, you know, on an instant messenger service, and had talked about how the fact that he knew that the Washington Post knew about this video and knew all about it, but refused to really tell what was in it to the degree that, you know, people would get the impact of it, was part of what motivated him to leak in the first place. And well, two things about that. So first of all, on that collateral murder video, Robert Gates famously said, well, you know what? Yeah, sure, fine. But you're just looking at war through a soda straw. You don't understand the context. But I do understand the context. What were they doing fighting in East Baghdad, Mance? They were fighting against Muqtada al-Sadr's guys. Who's Muqtada al-Sadr? He's the guy that his party just came out first place in the recent election. Just like they did in 2010. He was one leg on the Shiite United Iraqi Alliance stool that America was fighting the whole war for. So America preferred the Dawa Party and the Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution. But Sadr was part of that same alliance. But they didn't like him, so they were trying to marginalize him and attack him. And even though he was the most Iraqi nationalist among the Shiite leaders, and he had tried to forge an alliance with the Sunni insurgency from the earliest days of the war, at least in 2004, they accused him of being the most Iranian-backed of the Shiite leaders, when in fact the Dawa Party and the Supreme Islamic Council had been hiding in Iran for 30 years, from the time that Jimmy Carter told Saddam to invade up until the time that George W. Bush invaded Iraq in 2003 and they came in on his heels. So they were fighting. Those guys, those Reuters reporters, were massacred in a little subset of a war that America was fighting against the men they were fighting the whole war for. Talk about war through a soda straw. And in fact, if you read that book, The Good Soldiers, it's all about these men fighting in East Baghdad and Sadr City against Muqtada al-Sadr's guys. And there's only two places in that book where Finkel himself says, yeah, it's kind of strange that they're fighting against the guy they're fighting the whole war for. Oh, well. And then there's one scene where the war criminal, Colonel Kozlarich, who at least, well, three of his men have testified, two of them to me on my show, talked about how he ordered his men to commit war crimes and massacre any civilians who happened to be around if an IED ever went off. But Colonel Kozlarich at one point says, hey, yeah, that's kind of funny that we're here fighting a war against the guys we're fighting for. Oh, well, shrug. Get back out there, boys. Kill anyone who resists you. And that was the context of the collateral murder video. And if you see, you know, I guess it was an honest mistake, sort of, kind of, that they thought that this Reuters reporter and his telephoto lens was some kind of shoulder-fired, rocket-propelled grenade. But then after they massacre all, and they're just hooting and hollering and having so much fun killing these guys, and then a civilian in a minivan pulls up to try to help, and they massacre him and his two children in the minivan, too, for trying to come and help the wounded. Really important stuff. If people go and look at that, that's what America's wars really look like. You talk about blood on their hands. It was the State Department and the Defense Department that had blood on their hands. Bradley Manning, Chelsea Manning, was the hero who was trying to tell the American people. And you know what? Let me say one more thing about Manning here. The rat, Adrian Lamo, said, hey, Manning, why don't you sell this stuff to the Russians or the Chinese? And Manning said, what, are you kidding me? No, man, that's not what this is about. This isn't about me. I want the American people and the people of the world to see the truth so that they can use democracy to make reforms. Right? In other words, exactly why the First Amendment is in our Constitution. Exactly why Benjamin Franklin said we must have freedom of the press so that the people will know the truth so they can hold their government to account. Sell secrets to the Chinese? What in the... Now it was just this criminal who now is dead, and he's way better off dead. Adrian Lamo tried to entrap Manning into some worse felony there. And, you know, think about all the demonization of Chelsea Manning, you know, up through and including the court martial, and then when Obama commuted the sentence and let her go. This hero who risked everything. Oh, one more thing about Manning. Manning's, the major tipping point for Manning, as explained to Lamo in the chat, was that he was being made to participate in torture. Not directly, but pretty close. Men were being brought to him. He was basically participating in booking people who were arrested and helping the Iraqis send them off to jail. And one of these guys, at least one of them, was arrested only for writing a newspaper article. And it was called Where'd the Money Go? It was exactly the kind of article that you would want to see in any major newspaper in America about the mayor, the governor, the president, or anyone who's stealing money in their official capacity. Hey, Nouri al-Maliki, billions are coming in, and yet where are they going, man? We don't see it. And this man was arrested, and he was being hauled off to be tortured, probably to death. And Manning said to his commanding officer, hey, commanding officer, look at this. I had my guy translate it, and all it is it's a newspaper op-ed. Where'd the money go? This isn't criminal. This is crazy. What are we doing? And his commanding officer said, get back to work, Manning. And that was when Manning said, all right, that's enough of this, and took these documents and leaked them to WikiLeaks. In absolutely selfless and heroic act. don't care what anybody says. And I don't care how annoying Chelsea Manning is on Twitter since then either.
Yeah, man. Real, I mean, a real hero. I mean, we would not know this stuff had she not done this.
And it's in my book too. If you read Fool's Errand, there's stuff from the WikiLeaks there where, you know, the reporters went back and checked stories of massacres in Afghanistan that took place and then went back and checked the WikiLeaks and showed where these guys had just lied their asses off about what happened that day. Here's what they reported to their commanding officer. Here's what really happened. Where they just, you know, they're attacked and then they decide on their way back to base, they're just going to kill every single person they see on the way back to base for revenge. That was one of them. And they did.
Well, let's jump forward to 2016, because this is when, I mean, all hell breaks loose. Tell us about what 2016 revealed to us, the main leak that everybody that shook the world, basically.
Yeah, well, they revealed that Hillary Clinton should not have talked about, can't we just murder Julian Assange? Because, hey, guess what, lady? He's coming for you now. You can't do a drone strike in Great Britain. That might cause some fallout, dude. And so, well, in fact, so let's go back to before that. Because what had happened was back in 2011 or 12, these two women made these ridiculous trumped-up accusations against Assange where, you know, these pseudo sexual assault allegations amounted to supposedly that they had had consensual sex with him, but then at one point or another, he put it in without a condom on. And so then the next day or 2 days later, the two girls were talking and they basically talked themselves into going and reporting him to the police. And the one of them later said, well, geez, I just wanted them to make him take an STD test. I wasn't saying that he raped me or anything because, you know, he really didn't, et cetera. But that was enough. And I don't know exactly the circumstances here, but one of them was the former girlfriend of a CIA officer. And so it could have been that, or it could have just been this sixth wave ridiculous feminism where anything that you regret later amounts to an assault at the time, kind of nonsense. But that was enough of a pretext for the Swedes to pretend that they had a criminal investigation, not charges against him, but an investigation that they wanted to question him. And he was arrested in England, but then was bailed out, and then he hightailed it to the Ecuadorian embassy and snuck in there, and he got asylum from the Ecuadorians because it was already reported in the Washington Post that there was a secret grand jury and that they were pursuing espionage charges against him. It's since been reported that they have a sealed indictment. I don't know if that particular report about the indictment had already come out or not, but it was credibly reported that there was a grand jury investigating him and seeking to hit him with espionage charges. So he went and got asylum, and he's been imprisoned in the Ecuadorian embassy in London ever since then. And, you know, the UN Court of Human Rights and this and that, I forget what they're all called, but they have ruled that this is an unlawful detention. Now, the bogus criminal investigation in Sweden has already expired and canceled and long gone. Now the Brits are pretending that they just want him for skipping bail. But we all know that what that means is if they can get their filthy mitts on him, they're going to turn him over to the Department of Justice for what could be a death penalty offense of espionage against the United States. And this goes to the very important point about what even the New York Times lawyers. Now, the New York Times editorial page, they won't defend him. No major newspaper in America will take this man's side. But the New York Times lawyers last week said, geez, we don't see a legal distinction between what he does and what we do. And in fact, you may know this, Mance, that in Woodrow Wilson's Espionage Act of 1911, it says in there, which Obama prosecuted, almost 8 or 10 or something whistleblowers under the Espionage Act. Well, that act defines the crime of espionage as the publishing of classified information too. Now, the tradition has been since then in America that no, the leaker may go to prison, but the leakee will not be prosecuted by the Department of Justice if you know, obviously the New York Times and the Washington Post and the rest of them publish classified information all the time, usually handed to them on a silver platter by the state when they're trying to implicate an enemy. Ooh, we have secret information that says Saddam Hussein's going to kill you if we don't stop him first. This kind of thing. They sure don't get in trouble for that. But then even when they get a good scoop, say James Risen gets a scoop that says Saddam Hussein tried to surrender, but they wouldn't let him. He doesn't get in trouble for that either. You know, or publishing the Merlin story where the Americans, oops, accidentally gave the Iranians nuclear bomb blueprints in order to try to entrap them for holding them. He didn't get imprisoned for that. They did prosecute the leaker, Jeffrey Sterling, but they did not prosecute James Risen or the New York Times. Well, but the law says that they could, but they just haven't tried it. Now they're trying to do this to Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. And so the New York Times lawyers are saying, hey, wait a minute. If they can prosecute Julian Assange and WikiLeaks for espionage, then they can prosecute the New York Times for espionage. And that ought to make it real clear to you right now exactly what's at stake here. The freedom of the press in the United States, full stop. If they can do this to Assange, they can do this to any reporter you've ever heard of who has a classified government secret. And so that is what is at stake. And recognize too, okay? We talked about at the beginning that this is unconventional journalism, okay? This is something that the New York Times doesn't just post raw classified documents without context. But they could, and it makes no difference, okay? If we're talking about a snippet of a classified document, a quote out of a classified document, and then writing by a reporter that puts it in context, that is not different in kind at all from printing the entire document and not writing paragraphs introducing the context. Same damn difference. That's it. There's no legal distinction there. And so that is exactly what is at stake. And now, so Pompeo, now the Secretary of State, Trump's first director of the CIA, has said that this isn't a journalistic enterprise. This is a non-state intelligence agency, right? You see how that's simply made up bullshit. That doesn't mean anything. It's just an attempt to try to pretend that the First Amendment does not prevent the U.S. government, does not ban them permanently from prosecuting people for journalism. And so, and what he's referring to then is the CIA, et cetera's claims that the Russians hacked the DNC and turned the DNC emails, the Podesta emails, et cetera, over to WikiLeaks, which were then published in 2016 in the run-up to the election. And now, you know, I saw this clip the other day of the great Lawrence Wilkerson, who lied us into war in Iraq with Colin Powell. He was Colin Powell's chief of staff, and he's been trying to make up for it ever since. God bless him. And he went on the Bill Maher show, and Bill Maher is going, oh, but they attacked us. They attacked us. And, of course, the lowest scum on the entire face of the earth, Michael Moore, big, fat, communist, hypocrite, warmonger when the Democrats are warmongering, is sitting there right next to Bill Maher going, yeah, yeah, attacked us, attacked us. As though you're supposed to think, what, was there an attack that I missed? What are they talking about? Did the Russians sink one of our aircraft carriers? What did they do? Oh, they leaked completely true and accurate emails, supposedly, to WikiLeaks that published them. Yeah, what an attack. What an attack. Telling you information that you had every right to know. And just as Glenn Greenwald has written for years, I don't give a damn where the leak came from. If it's good information, it's good information. And any journalist should want to publish it. Say you hate Chelsea Manning. You can't believe that Chelsea Manning would leak those documents. Oh, well, wow, did you see what's in here? You gotta write about that. That's it. That's the job of a reporter. So whether it was Vladimir Putin who was behind it, yeah, right, or not, the fact of the matter is, we had the right to all of that information. And of course, when they go, oh, attacked us, attacked us, attacked us, they're skipping over the whole question of, well, what was in the emails? And how come the emails from the DCC, the DNC, and Hillary's campaign manager, John Podesta, how come they didn't make her look like the world's greatest hero? How come this wasn't an operation by Putin to help Hillary Clinton win the election by leaking these emails that showed what a wonderful and classy Secretary of State she had been? and what a wonderful candidate she had been, how fairly she treated and the DNC had treated Bernie Sanders in the primaries, etc., right? But of course, it just goes without saying, she's the lowest scum of the earth imaginable, and those emails prove no such thing. They, in fact, I mean, about her being a great candidate, they prove that they rigged the election, that she cheated in the debates with Donna Brazile from CNN, that they had a Pied Piper strategy. Remember, all through 2015 and 16, it was a little bit confusing. People say, I guess it's just for the ratings. And CNN would show an empty podium of Donald Trump. Well, meanwhile, Bernie Sanders live at the same time would have a massive rally, Obama-sized rally of thousands of people. And they never would show his live speeches on TV ever, ever. Meanwhile, here's an hour of hairdo girls talking with a square over their shoulder of an empty Trump podium just waiting for him to come. And we know that that was a favor to Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, part of the way that she cheated was she asked her friends in the media to promote Donald Trump because she thought that would make, he would be the easier candidate to beat. So the Pied, that's all you have to do is search Pied Piper strategy, and there it is in the memos. Let's get the media to promote Ben Carson, Ted Cruz, and Donald Trump because they're the wingers. They'll be the easiest to beat, which just goes to show how absolutely stupid these Democrats are in an outsider year, in a, you know, not really Tea Party anymore, but in a anti-establishment atmosphere, that Donald Trump would be the easiest to beat by her, when obviously Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio or some scum like that, some centrist scum like that would have been far easier for her to handle. Although, I think, honestly, even Rubio probably could have beat her because she's just the least charismatic person in the world. She has so many negatives. But when they say attacked, Russia attacked, Russia attacked, first of all, they're just assuming the conclusion. Saddam's making nukes. Saddam's making nukes. What are we going to do about it? But they're not proving to you Saddam's making nukes. They're just skipping ahead to what are we going to do about it because they can't prove to you Saddam's making nukes. Same thing here. They can't prove that Russia had anything to do with this. But they can skip ahead and say Russia attacked, Russia attacked, and then, you know, it's just baked in somehow that, well, of course, yeah, I mean, if you show the American people what Hillary Clinton's really about, obviously that's going to hurt her. And obviously it did.
Well, I want to try and wrap this up. So tell me where you think this goes from here. It looks like Assange is going to be has Assange already been kicked out of the Ecuadorian embassy?
No, but they've cut off his internet access a few months ago, and it was reported, I think first by some right-wing bad guys, I forget exactly who, but then confirmed by The Intercept that the new president, and he's an Ecuadorian citizen now, so I don't know how they can do this, but the new Ecuadorian president, under pressure from the U.S., is moving to deny him asylum and to kick him out of the embassy, at which case he very well is very likely to be, you know, quite frankly, kidnapped by the British and extradited to the United States, where he faces life in prison or even the death penalty for espionage.
Do you think there's any chance that Trump would pardon him?
Probably not in this atmosphere, when the whole idea is that he's some kind of co-conspirator with the Russians. Oh, you know what? So here's another story that came out in The Hill a few weeks ago, that Assange, okay, so remember the Vault 7 leak of all the, this was the CIA's hacking tools. You know, the ones where they can make it look like it was the Russians? Marble is what that one was called.
Oh, they could hack into people's cars and crash them.
Yeah, well, let's skip that one for now.
In Vault 7.
And so the CIA did not want this coming out. And the CIA was prepared to negotiate. They were in the middle of negotiating with Julian Assange that, you know, we will let you go. We will drop the charges. We will have you set free, whatever it is, if you will not leak this Vault 7 stuff, this shadow broker stuff. And they were in the middle of that negotiation, and Assange was also promising that he could prove and that he would prove that it was not the Russians who leaked the DNC and the Podesta emails. And then I think it was Assange's lawyer talked to an aide to Senator John Warner. Big mistake. And then Senator John Warner alerted Comey, the director of the FBI, and Comey intervened and scotched the negotiation. And then Assange went ahead and went forward and published those Vault 7 hacking tools. So I don't know why the CIA hasn't thrown, Comey out of a helicopter for that. They must have had one hell of a fight at the country club that weekend or something. But that was the lengths that the FBI was willing to go, in order to let the CIA's hacking tools be set free in the world. If they could, if necessary, so that they can continue this trumped up case against Julian Assange. And, you know, as far as Trump pardoning him, I don't think so. The only thing that could really stop this would be if the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Miami Herald, the Dallas Morning News, the Chicago Tribune, the LA Times, the Seattle Post Intelligencer swore that they would go to ultimate jihad to publish every secret they could possibly get their hands on to implicate any pig, left, right, FBI, CIA, or anything else, to bring this government down before they let them prosecute Julian Assange. But of course they won't do that because they're basically servants of state power. They are the handmaidens of the state, not the check and balance that Benjamin Franklin wanted them to be. And so I'm predicting the worst here. I don't see what could stop it, Mance, at this point.
You would think if he is an Ecuadorian citizen, they would do everything to protect him and just send him to Ecuador, put him on a diplomatic plane to Ecuador or something like that. But
remember, he was on a plane to Latin America when Obama. First of all, he was changing planes in Russia when they stripped his passport. Oh no, that's Ed Snowden's story. But Snowden's a traitor. He's in Russia. But it was Obama who stranded him in Russia by stripping his passport while he was changing planes on his way to Latin America, and in fact, they even forced down an Austrian diplomat's plane under their presumption that Snowden was aboard. So, you know, on a diplomatic plane, hiding in a diplomatic pouch, that won't stop the U.S. government. They'd probably blow that plane out of the sky and deal with the aftermath later. They don't care.
Well, man, this is a lot of information, and I know people know Julian Assange's name, and they know who WikiLeaks is, and they know Bradley Manning, but I don't think people, you know, the average person is not going to put in the kind of time that you put in to learn all of this, and especially since it's, you know, just about all of it relates to your main field, foreign policy. So, thanks, man. I know people are going to love this one, and every time you come on with great information, and everybody who hits me up in comments says that you're the best guest that I have on, and my apologies to everybody else who comes on that I love, but they say you're the best, and thanks for the info, man.
Absolutely, anytime, Mance. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Scott. I want to thank you for tuning into the Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast. I want to thank Scott for coming on again. I want to remind you that I wrote 2 books, Freedom Through Memedom, Kids Are Not Alright. Check them out on Amazon or on my website, freemanbeyondthewall.com. I'll be back at you in a couple days with another podcast. So take care and bye.